Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is the one, the only, Coast to Coast AM. And to paraphrase the old advertising slogan, there is no substitute. Did you say stimulus? Is that the word on the tip of your tongue? Stimulus? Because I've got your stimulus. I got your stimulus right here. And that's not a euphemism or a double entendre. Not entirely, anyway. Stimulation is what we do here. It's why the program exists. To stimulate your noggin. To get the juices percolating. To make you think about things that don't get discussed much in other broadcast forums. This place, after all, is a crossroads of shadow and light. A phantasmagorical marketplace of ideas and blasphemies. A melting pot of cultures and subcultures from the benign to the bizarre. Stimulus? How much do you want? My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, your ramrod of the airwaves for the next 4 hours. Coming to you from the warm and friendly confines of KXNT Radio in the most outrageous city in the world, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. Now, like your hometown, I would imagine Las Vegas is taking its lumps these days, hurting. Unemployment's way up. Gaming revenues are way down. Tourism, visitors, all that stuff. Bankruptcies, foreclosures, firings. You know the drill. But we're still open for business here. And I'll tell you, if you thought about coming to Las Vegas but put it off, now's the time. The deals are ridiculous. Rooms on the Strip as low as $20 a night. Two-for-one tickets to many of the biggest shows. I don't mean to be too much of a pitch man for my hometown, but wow, there are some smoking deals. My thanks to the folks here at KXNT for their hospitality. My buddy Ray getting me on the air here tonight. Last month, as you might know, on February 22nd, I worked most of the day to put together material for what I thought was going to be a pretty fun and interesting show. You know, we'd done all our checks, we're ready to go, and then 30 seconds before we went on the air, bam, the power goes out at this remote site where I was going to host the show from. And I was sitting there in pitch black, wondering what to do. I stumbled around and found my cell phone and opened it up, and that was the only light I had in this room. I used that light to sort of help myself navigate to get outside, and it was a little bit weird because the place across the street in the one direction, they had their lights on, and the place across the street in the other direction had their lights on, and all around me it seemed like there was electricity except for six houses, the ones directly next to the place where I was, and few minutes went by, and the producers of Coast called me on the cell phone in a bit of a panic, perplexed about what had happened. You know, we wanted to hang on, hoping the power would come back on in a minute or so, and 20 minutes went by, and they thought of having me come on the show during the break in the tape show to explain what had happened, but the cell phone signal wasn't all that great. So after about 45 minutes, the call was made to kill the show, let the replay continue. And then, boom, within a minute of that decision, the power comes back on. And I know I love a good conspiracy story just as much as you guys do, and it seemed a little too convenient at the time. But, I was told by the power company that a car had hit a pole, knocked out power to a total of 28 customers. I could see six. But I'm pretty sure I was the only one of those 28 customers who was getting ready to go live on the air all over North America. So, believe me, I was just as unhappy with the situation as you were. You know, I had worked, as I said, for a lot of hours that day to put together a pretty good show. And poof, all that went out the window. Most of those stories I'd selected to comment on are now old news. But at least the work I did preparing for the guest is not wasted, since tonight Dr. Michael Sala will be here to talk about exopolitics, disclosure, whether the president is getting ready to spill the ET beans. A lot of people, including Dr. Sala, think that is the case. So tonight we'll ask him to make the case, show us the evidence. He is an engaging guy, and I think it'll be a lively and stimulating, there's that word again, discussion. Coming up in this hour, though, is another guest, James Carrion, the head of MUFON. You'll remember last fall when I had businessman Robert Bigelow, a friend of mine from Las Vegas here. He was on the show, and I told you at the time that Mr. Bigelow was about to break some big news, and he did. He unveiled for the first time the creation of something called BAS, Bigelow Advanced Aerospace Systems. It's a new research organization designed for one purpose, to find and reproduce the technology that will take us to the stars. And Bob was very candid in describing what he hoped to do. Maybe find some backyard inventor who had perfected some sort of anti-grav technology in his garage, or maybe coax some old-timer, some insider who had retired, but before he left, he'd snagged a piece of the Roswell wreckage, or maybe had the diagrams from a U.S. government flying saucer. Bigelow's trying to get people like that to come forward, give up the information, and maybe collect some dough. And I told you at the time it was a major development and it was big news, at least I thought it was, that Bigelow was putting together this huge team to carry out his vision. But after our interview, the story went kind of poof. The UFO hierarchy basically ignored it, ho-hum, went back to their usual petty bickering about things like what color socks the ETs were wearing at the Aztec crash site, stuff like that. But they're not ignoring it anymore. About 2 weeks ago, an announcement was made about an agreement reached between Bigelow and MUFON, with MUFON sort of acting as the contact point for this incredibly important and well-funded effort, which, if it succeeds, will literally change our world forever. So coming up in a couple of minutes, James Carrion of MUFON will be here to tell us what it means and how you might be able to get involved in all this stuff. Very exciting. First, though, a couple of other notes. On the Coast to Coast website tonight, a couple of items posted by our webmaster, Lex. One is something that was sent to me by a listener, and it's about the stimulus program, all that money that's being spent. You know, we regular folks who don't live in Washington have trouble getting our heads around just how much a billion of anything is, let alone a trillion. You know, billion, that's so 90s now. It's trillion is the number of the day. $1 trillion, for example, what would it even look like? And on the website is sort of a clever way to visualize what $1 trillion looks like. It won't fit in your wallet or your car or your house. Take a look when you get a moment. Coast does have a new website, by the way, newly designed, and I know a lot of work went into this. At present, it's being previewed only, but you have to be a subscriber to the Coast newsletter to be able to see the preview and to comment on it before they officially unleash it. The newsletter's free, by the way, so if you sign up when you get a chance, and then you can cruise in and take a look at the new website as well. Also posted on the website under Hot Stories is something that really caught my eye. It's a story from Friday's L.A. Times. Sorry, but I have some trouble with some of the information that's in the story, and I'll explain that in a moment. The headline of the story is Pentagon Plans Blimp to Spy from New Heights. And this report says the Pentagon said Thursday it intends to spend $400 million to develop a giant dirigible that will float 65,000 feet above the Earth for 10 years, providing unblinking and intricate radar surveillance of vehicles, planes, and even people below. This thing would be 450 feet long, and the craft would give the U.S. military a better understanding of an adversary's movements, habits, tactics, officials said. The ability to constantly monitor small movements in a wide area, say the Afghan-Pakistan border, would dramatically improve military intelligence, according to this story. Flying at 65,000 feet, the giant airship would be nearly impossible to see and would be beyond the range of any handheld missile and safe for most fighter planes. The Air Force has signed this agreement with DARPA to develop a demonstration project by 2014. The problem I have with this is I have a sneaking suspicion they already have something like this, that it's been used to not only spy along the Afghan-Pakistan border, but it's been used right here at home. Gigantic platforms packed with computers and sensors that essentially can sit up there like a giant vacuum cleaner and suck up everything electronic, your cell phone calls, your emails, broadcast signals, everything. I can't prove it, but that's what I suspect, and I've had some conversations with some former insiders who have sort of confirmed that for me. Remember all the sightings a couple of years ago, these gigantic black triangles that were seen all over the place but seemed to be concentrated going to and from military bases? You know, out at my favorite secret base here in Nevada, Area 51, there's this humongous new hangar, and everybody's been trying to figure out what it's for. It's huge beyond anything it would be used for any airplane that we know of. And some of my pals who are Area 51 watchers speculate that the hangar might be for something just like this. Anyway, the full article about this planned Pentagon blimp is posted on our website, so take a peek. I think the most interesting story of the week to me is one out of Minnesota, where a famed investigative reporter, Seymour Hersh, was speaking to an audience and responded to a question after his talk was over, and it revealed something about what he's working on, something that he probably didn't mean to say. You heard this story? I don't think it's got much mainstream media attention, a little bit. It's about what he says was an ongoing executive assassination ring. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I'll talk a little bit more about that, have a couple of other news items. Then we'll be joined by James Carrion of MUFON to talk about this exciting new research effort he's involved with. Stay with us. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Knapp. Before the break, we were talking about this story, this comment actually made by investigative reporter Seymour Hersh. He was speaking to a group in Minnesota, and this report is from the MinnesotaPost.com, and going through a whole bunch of stories that he'd worked on before. And at the end, somebody asks him a question, and he sort of spills out this this information about what he called an executive assassination ring. He said, Congress has no oversight over this thing. It's been going on and on. After 9/11, he says, I haven't written about it yet, but the CIA was very deeply involved in domestic activities, domestic meaning here in the U.S., against people they thought to be enemies of the state without any legal authority for it. And then he said something about something called the Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC, special wings of this special operations community that had been set up to operate independently. They didn't report to anybody except Vice President Cheney, not even reporting to the Secretary of Defense. And he says, under the president's authority, they were going into countries, not talking to the ambassador or the CIA station chief, finding people on a list and executing them and then leaving. He said it's been going on in the name of all of us. Complicated because the guys doing it are not murderers, and yet they're committing what would normally be called murder. Well, you know, Hersh says that he's still working on this story, which maybe is why a few other media outlets pulled up on it, picked up on it. My questions are, one, is it true? Because, I mean, Hersh hasn't written it yet. We don't know what proof he has, whether that proof is definitive or speculative. Secondly, you know, my initial reaction is, wow, that's got to be illegal. I mean, it's been the law of our land for many years. We don't okay assassinations anymore. We used to. It always seemed to backfire, assassinating foreign leaders and things of that sort. Same as like with coups. They didn't do any more of those coups because they always seemed to backfire. But then, you know, you have to wonder, what's the difference? We send teams of special ops commandos into war zones, into danger zones, and they kill people. They're soldiers. So what is the distinction, of course, between sending soldiers in and calling them something else and having them kill people who we determine to be our enemy? Interesting questions. I sure hope we get to see Seymour Hersh's story and more information on that before too long. I'm sure you can pick up on it if you run a search on the Internet, if you haven't already. I'm going to be joined now by James Carrion, our friend, the head of MUFON. James, you there?
I'm here, George.
Hey, I don't know if you heard my intro a couple of minutes ago, but I was talking about this announcement that Bob Bigelow made a couple of months ago, and he did it on this show, and he broke the news about the creation of BASS, and I thought it would cause a big ripple in the UFO community, and it sort of went thud. Nobody was really paying attention to it. Now, however, this announcement came out a couple of several days ago about him hooking up with you folks. Give me a nutshell, a thumbnail sketch of exactly what it is that you've agreed to do with him.
Sure. What MUFON is doing is we're actually being subcontracted to provide information to BASS. So we're essentially an information provider, in our case specifically on UFOs.
So meaning your members or investigators go out into the field. Are you taking assignments from Bob Bigelow, or are you just tracking down things you think he'd be interested in hearing or learning?
Well, really what we're interested in providing to them and what they're interested in getting from us is what we call our Category 2-3 case investigations. MUFON has a three-category system, and it's based on the valet classification system. Basically, anything that involves physical evidence, that involves a close encounter, that involves entity being seen or reality transformed, anything except for your typical run-of-the-mill lights in the sky, those are what we call Category 2-3. So we've been subcontracted to get out to the field quickly on those cases in less than 24 hours so that we can quickly gather the data that needs to be gathered.
Tell me this. When Bigelow or some of his representatives came to you and made this pitch, were you floored?
Well, we sort of. I mean, we knew about the company, and we knew that they were actively interested in advanced technology 75 to 100 years in the future. So this sort of dovetailed right into what we do. So we were surprised that they went to MUFON first, but we're excited and we're glad they did.
Well, I mean, have you started on any cases yet? Anything you're out there in the field tracking down that you can tell us about?
Actually, we haven't made our first deployment yet. We've been in a operational build mode right now, both accepting the applications from our own investigators who are going to be the folks we're deploying on this project, and just sort of putting all the logistics in place for doing that. So we're supposed to be up and running and ready to roll out the door April 1st.
Bob had said on this program last fall that the ultimate aim of this this research effort was basically a hard technology, to find it or develop it, somehow come across it, technology that basically we would be able to build our own flying saucers or craft that would take us to the stars. Do you think that that's doable?
Well, I think it's doable because whatever we can imagine, we can do. So I definitely think it's doable and fully supportive of it.
And how would it work? You go out, your guys go out in the field, or is somebody from Bigelow's organization going with you, or you're sending them back the information?
Well, we're primarily going out there and trying to get there quickly to try to gather the evidence and before it's destroyed or it's tampered with, and then providing that back in a report to BASS. As far as whether their folks will deploy simultaneously or during or after us, I really can't answer that because we're going out there to sort of be the first responders.
You know, Bob Bigelow is a friend of mine. I've known him for more than 20 years, but he has a reputation for playing his cards pretty close to the vest in terms of information. That came up when we were working on the Skinwalker Ranch stuff and in other capacities. Whether it's a fair criticism or not, that label gets attached to him. And I wanted to know, James, what assurances have you been given that the information, that what you find will make its way into the public realm?
Well, that was one of our major concerns going into the project, was making sure that MUFON was meeting its mission, which is a scientific study of UFOs for the benefit of humanity. So our allegiance is to the public. And we definitely want to make sure any information that we gather gets out in the public domain. So we've received assurances that any physical evidence that would require testing by a third-party laboratory, that information would be shared with MUFON. And we are free to publish that in our journal or speak about it at our symposium or to make it public like any of the other information we gather.
You know how crazy and suspicious all of us in the UFO world are. I wondered if you have been hit with any sort of behind-the-scenes, off-the-cuff, private conversations in which people are saying, hey, do you know what you're getting into? This sounds really suspicious and sneaky, and you better watch out. That kind of stuff?
Well, I think those conversations are always taking place in the UFO field, and you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. So there's always a conspiracy theory somebody's going to hatch. The way I see it, George, is that as long as MUFON is staying true to our mission, as long as we're pursuing our goals, and as long as we're not compromising those goals, then I'm all for it. And this is something that's never been done before. It's cutting edge, and, you know, change is good. So whatever is going to help us do a better job at what we do, I'm going to pursue it.
This is sort of like a pilot program, right? And for how long?
It is a pilot program. Our contract is for a year. We have a review window that's basically June 30th, at which point Baskin will review the results of the project so far, and they could terminate the funding at that point, or they could continue it. So, you know, we're trying as much as possible to make this a success. But at the same time, you know, we can't call in UFOs on demand. So we're hoping that during this time period that we are able to gather some quality data, and we'll just have to take a wait-and-see approach.
Did I read it right that your investigators can actually be paid? I know that most of them, all of them, pretty much, they do this, you know, whatever they investigate on MUFON's behalf, they do it on their own time, on their own dime. That there will be a chance for some of your folks to be paid as part of this program.
That's correct. And just to give you a little history, MUFON created a rapid response team last year called our STAR team, which stands for Strike Team for Area Research. So we recruited volunteers among our ranks that had the time to be deployed at a moment's notice. And these folks had the time because they were retired, and, you know, they were willing to go when we needed them. And, of course, that was we did a couple deployments with these folks. Now, once we were able to negotiate this project with BASS, we thought, okay, this is a way of taking our current STAR team and just expanding it to a larger number of folks who may not have as much time or may not have the financial means to be able to get out there, and so we can pay them for their time so we can get our rapid response.
Man, I'm thinking you probably got some applause from that. We're going to take a break, James. Stay with us, everyone. Stay with us for more with James Carrion. We'll be opening up the phone lines and let you ask him some questions about this exciting new research project as well. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM. Billionaire real estate investor Bob Bigelow of Las Vegas is putting his money where his mouth is. He's probably spent millions of dollars, more than any single individual in the history of the world, on the solid UFO research, and now he's up the ante a little bit, putting up a bundle of money and resources for MUFON and others to go ahead and go out and uncover whatever UFO secrets there are out there, with the idea of harnessing that technology and building our own spacecraft capable of traveling to the stars. We're talking with International Director of MUFON, James Carrion, about just how that works, and I would imagine he's had a little bit of a spark of interest among his investigators, maybe a jump in recruitment. We'll open up the phone line so you can ask James about how this works when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're having a chat with a good friend of this program, James Carrion, the International Director of MUFON, about this exciting new research project that's been launched by Bob Bigelow here in Las Vegas. James, have you had any kind of a noticeable reaction among your investigators, any kind of increase in volunteers since the word came out?
Absolutely. We've had a real good number of folks within MUFON's own ranks that have applied for these key positions in the project. And we spent a couple of days going over resumes and applications, and I'm just extremely impressed with the quality of folks that we count as MUFON investigators, folks who have years and years of law investigation experience, crime scene technicians, you name it. So folks that already have the experience to get out there in the field and do a quality job, and now we'll be able to get them out there quickly. So we're very happy with the response.
That's great. Now let's just play what if. What if there really is some backyard inventor who's got something that works, or somebody out there who's got a chunk from a crash site or something? You guys come across it in the course of your investigation. What do you do with it? Do you buy it? Does Mr. Bigelow buy it through you guys?
You know, George, we've never actually purchased physical evidence. We have a good discussion with the witness where we ask them to release it to MUFON for investigation purposes. We have them sign a form where they retain ownership of it. So we never actually, you know, spend money on physical evidence. I don't think we'll be doing that anytime soon. Our interest is purely scientific, and we like to get there quickly to be able to gather that evidence, maintain chain of custody, and get it to a lab as quickly as possible.
Have you had any mainstream media interest in this? Anybody wanting to do stories on it? Because until a couple of days ago, there had been almost nothing anywhere about it.
We've actually had very little response from the mainstream media, a couple of independent newspapers here and there, but no overwhelming response on the part of the media.
What do you make of that? I mean, I would think that this would be the kind of thing that would jump out at even a mainstream story.
Well, you know, this is your line of work, George. The media is pretty fickle. You know, they're hot and they're cold when it comes to the UFO topic, so who knows?
How much contact are you in with the Bigelow organization? I've heard this story from some of the people I know over there, but that they are in the process of hiring up to 50 scientists. I don't think they got 50 there now, but they're putting together quite a team, aren't they?
That's what I understand, but they would probably be the best folks to ask that. But we do main, as part of our project with BASS, we are on a daily we have daily conversations with them, as well as weekly teleconference calls. So we're coordinating very closely with them our efforts.
Well, I'm waiting for some calls to come in on our lines here. I want to ask you about some other UFO matters. What's hot? Stephenville hot again?
Stephenville's not hot. It was hot back in October when they had the second wave, but we haven't seen a lot of activity out there recently. And I'm not sure if there's any major hotspots going on right now. It's pretty sporadic activity. It's pretty much all over the U.S. I don't know if you've had a chance to go to our website and check out our UFO stalker map that shows the last 20 sightings. And I checked it this morning, and we have activity pretty much across the board, but no particular hotspots right now.
I'd like to get your take on sort of the topic of the night. We're going to have Michael Sala on here in a little bit. This idea of disclosure. Exopolitics, the possibility that the president will soon make an announcement. I don't know about you, whether MUFON has an opinion or a position, or whether you personally do, but let's start with your personal view on this.
Well, I can tell you my personal view. I don't see disclosure happening anytime soon, just because there's really no incentive on the part of those who are in the know to release to us who are not in the know what they know. I think that's the bottom line. I think that disclosure carrot has been hanging in front of us for the last 40 years. And, you know, we sort of see these little tidbits of information coming out or rumors of imminent disclosure, but they never materialize. So I'm not very hopeful that's going to happen anytime soon. Now, what I find interesting is that a lot of folks think that the disclosure is going to come from those who are in the know. And I think really what we should be focusing our efforts on is asking the right questions and pursuing the right research and pushing from our side, because the bottom line is I don't think that there are enough reasons for those in the know to disclose to us what they know, because there's simply no, they have no incentives, or there's the pros and cons, or somebody put it, you know, there's a chalkboard with pros of disclosure and cons of disclosure. And the cons, the list is much longer than the pros. So yeah, I simply don't see that happening. I kind of feel like, if you remember the old Arthurian legend of the Knights of the Round Table and Percival, the knight who went out looking for the Holy Grail, and when he went to the Fisher King's castle and the Grail was sort of pranced in front of him, one of the things Percival did not do was ask the right question. And lo and behold, the Grail was lost. His quest failed. So I think us and you, the folks here in ufology, we need to ask the hard questions. And I think we spend a lot of time listening and expecting and hoping, but we're not doing or asking the hard questions and doing the hard research that's required of us. So I'm hoping to see more of that, at least from the ufology side.
Well put, James. We're going to go to the phone lines. Steve in St. Louis has a question for you. Hi, Steve.
Knowing that there has been an extraterrestrial burial in Troy, Illinois, which is 17 miles from St. Louis.
James, does that ring a bell with you?
I don't know of any extraterrestrial burial in St. Louis.
No, there is one.
Tell us.
Well, I had a friend of mine who has been studying UFOs for quite a while, and I spent 20 years in aerospace programs, and I spent about 15 years with MUFON people. We had an individual who knew about an area where they were going to build some homes, and in this area they want to make sure that Indians aren't buried there because it's sacred ground. Now, I do dowsing, and they asked me to come out, and I found a spot where a grave was suspected, and it had three stones in it. These were stones that were created by running water, and it's called conglomerate. It has a permanent magnetic field in it. They had three of them in a circle. And then alongside of it, for 4 foot, there was a sign, and we checked that, and after they excavated it, it was all powder. There was a body in there. It was powder. It was between 3.5 and 4 feet tall. And so it was humanoid.
Now, well, how do you know it's an alien, though?
Okay, because extraterrestrials do not have bones. They can go into space. Americans, any of us, we can't go into space because you'll lose bone mass. You can't go up in there. This is the folly of trying to travel out there. You're never going to travel out there. You're going to travel in a spiritual way, but not in a physical way.
Okay. Well, Steve, thanks for that comment. We're going to try to stick to the topic at hand with James now. We're talking about the Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies research proposal. I thank you for that call. Ed in Washington, what's on your mind, Ed?
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering, with the recent events of the economy and the 2012 prophecy coming into effect, do you think that you will be seeing more sightings at the Bigelow Institute? And the second part to my question is, even if the government tries to cover up the extraterrestrial sightings, do you think that there'll be enough of them where mainstream America and the world will just start accepting that we are not alone?
Well, that's sort of always been the challenge, hasn't it, James?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, I think anybody who listened to your interview with Mr. Bigelow knows that he believes that this phenomenon is absolutely real, and I would agree with that. This is an absolutely real phenomena, and it's a mystery that begs to be solved. So we're sure hoping that something exciting happens soon, and that the this resolution that we've been looking for so long falls into our lap.
But tell me this, in conjunction with what Ed's first question there was, do you see any kind of a statistical correlation between, you know, unsettled times, economic troubles, turmoil in the world, and increases or decreases in UFO sightings?
Actually, I think I've never looked at any real hard studies on that, but I think it's been argued the other way, which is when there's times of national crisis, there's been an increase in UFO sightings. A lot of folks want to blame that on, for example, during the Cold War, on war nerves and people just being very nervous and anxious. And some sociologists even go as far as saying that UFOs are modern angst, that folks are looking for salvation from the stars to help ease their local troubles. But I haven't seen any hard studies being done on that.
Okay, Ed, thanks for that call and question. Jim in Yuma. Hi, Jim.
Hey, George.
Yes.
I'd like to ask James if he will consider investigating an interdimensional porthole that I know where's at.
Well, tell us a little bit more about what you know of this portal.
Well, I was standing in my yard, and this, you call it a spaceship, was about 800 or 900 feet long, come down over Sheridan, come by me. I thought it was going to crash. It come by me within 50 feet of me, 50 to 75 feet of me. I turned around, and I was amazed by this thing. It was so huge. And I turned over to my right, and where the tracks were, and the air opened up, and this thing went right in the air. I mean, right in, like he was pulling into a garage. The guy that was flying this thing knew exactly where he was going. This thing was totally silent. And it was coming down so smooth, it was just unreal. And if you're standing next to a freeway, you know, and a semi flies by you, you're going to get just about blown over. Well, there wasn't a breeze or anything here.
And did you say 800 feet long?
800 to 900 feet long. Our parking lot is 500 feet across. The guy's storage buildings are, his lot is 300 feet. And it was from one end of that to our fence, and it went right in this porthole. And I mean, I could draw you a picture of it. You can give me a lie detector test. You can do anything you want. But I was wondering if he would investigate this.
Maybe we ask it this way, James. Let's say you hear that report from Jim and Yuma. How do you proceed? What do you do with something like information like that?
Well, we would definitely dispatch some investigators out to talk to the witness and just to gather the basic story. Now, if this is a single incident event where it's seen and it never reoccurs, it's definitely worthy of us, jotting down. If it's a site-based anomaly where it continues to reoccur, sort of along the lines of the Skinwalker Ranch or Marley Woods in Missouri, then I think we probably want to get a team to be down there and spend a considerable amount of time just trying to document any activity.
So for Jim and Yuma, are you interested in communicating with him further and getting some details?
Absolutely. He can go to our website at www.mufon.com and file a case report. and that would trigger a Category 2, 3 response.
All right, Jim, thanks for the call, and let us know how that works out. We're going to go to Simone in Illinois. Hi, Simone.
Hi, thanks for letting me talk to you, and it's an honor to speak to James Carrion. I'm very impressed with James as the new MUFON director, and my question is regarding the abduction phenomenon and abductees. What is MUFON's policy? Where do you draw the line, if you do, on what makes for an abductee and what doesn't? And I'll give you an example. Like, I know this one guy, he's really vocal about that. His subjective perceptions, and he has voices in his head, and he said that makes him an abductee. And my idea of an abductee is like Travis Walton, Charles Hickson, Calvin Parker, the Allagash case. And you see where I'm going? And so what do you think of that? What is your can you hear me?
Sure, yes. I can hear you just fine. Thank you for that question. Well, I think there's obviously some standards that by which somebody classifies an abductee, one that they claim to be abducted and they're taken on board craft or experimented with. There's a number of criteria. There's also a fine line between what somebody who calls themselves an abductee and a contactee. So I think MUFON is very interested in the whole abduction phenomena, and we actually have a new project moving forward for handling abduction cases with a little more thoroughness and scientific rigor than we have in the past. And part of that includes psychological testing, because there are folks who criticize the abduction phenomena as being related to post-traumatic stress syndrome or past trauma that's being disguised as abductions. So we definitely pursuing it going forward. We want to make sure that we're using some sort of scientific standards. We actually have a very good team of psychiatrists and psychologists who are putting together various proposals right now that we're pursuing in terms of research. So yeah, we're extremely interested in the entire phenomenon.
Thanks, Simone. Thanks for that call. We got time for one more call. This sounds like it might be an interesting one. An anonymous military guy in Mississippi wants to talk to James. Mr. Anonymous, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just curious as to how much research was going into military, and had he ever, and I shouldn't say this, had he ever heard of anything called CBAT?
CBAT?
CBAT.
CBAT. Can you elaborate?
I cannot. I shouldn't even say it, but I just was curious as to how much research you were doing into the military operations that were flying the skies.
Well, I'll tell you, I think that part of what the Bigelow, the Bass thing is going to be looking for is secrets that were once held somewhere in the military realm that maybe are stashed away in somebody's basement or something like that. Am I correct, James?
You know, we're looking for anything that involves physical evidence, and so this has actually brought up some interesting scenarios we can envision, because our military is flying some very exotic craft around our skies, and if one of these things were to crash and MUFON were to be the first to be on the scene, not very likely, but you never know, that really brings up a real sticky situation for us, because it's exotic, it's something that is unconventional, but it turns out to be ours and highly classified. So we are worried about those types of scenarios. And at the same time, we know that the military uses the UFO field for cover for these exotic projects. So it's something we've factored into the project, and we're hoping that we never have to see ourselves in one of those sticky situations.
So, Mr. Anonymous, are you talking about CBAT as being something? Well, I think we're about out of time, but we're going to maybe have to try to hang on and reach you some other time, because it sounds like CBAT might be something that might be confused for a crash UFO if one ever fell out of the sky. We'd like to hear more from you. James Carrion, thanks very much for joining us. I appreciate your being a friend of the program and wish you good luck with this joint operation with Bass. We'll have you back again to give us an update. Coming up in a couple of minutes, Dr. Michael Sala here to talk about exopolitics and disclosure. Stay with us. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM.